Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
He was just a sweet, kind person, emotional guy. It was unusual of Adam because he'd always text or call my mom and be like, hey, I'm here, always. So right there, we were already like, this is weird. It has to be somewhere here.
I've talked myself up to saying, you know, no, this is enough time to, you know, you held it in for so long, and I feel like it's enough time for us to finally just speak about it, as harsh as it is, because it's been so long and we have no answers.
I just know that everything about that whole thing is really fishy, and the town knows who did it. The cops know who did it. The sheriffs know who did it. And the guy who's responsible has ties to a lot of strong people out here, and they can get away with it.
It's one of those things where you kind of put faith in people that someone would have a conscience enough to come forward and tell what they had seen happen.
21-year-old Adam Castillo left his Wilcox, Arizona home on September 13th, 2008, to attend a party. He left his phone and wallet behind at the house. He caught a ride to the party that was taking place outside of town, between Wilcox and Kansas Settlement, Arizona, in an area that locals call the Loop. It has been reported that there were more than 25 partygoers there that night, and they all made it home except Adam Castillo. The last reported sighting of Adam was around 2 a.m. on the 14th. Law enforcement conducted extensive searches in the area of the party, but no trace of Adam has ever been found. Numerous people who were at the party were interviewed, but no one seems to know when Adam left or with who. Adam's family has been working to piece together the clues over the past 12 years, and they're still hopeful that someone will come forward with a lead that could help solve this case. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 271 of The Vanished, Adam Castillo's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. For this story, we spoke to Adam's sister Cassandra, who he was very close to. She told us about growing up with Adam.
There's six of us. Three boys and three girls. We used to get called the Mexican Brady Bunch. And three boys first, and then three girls, and I'm the oldest girl. So Adam is the smallest boy, or youngest boy, I should say. And the three middle children, so Adam, myself, and my sister, Ariana, we're all 18 months apart. Very close. He was just an awesome guy. He was like the definition of a skater kid. Preteen on, just always on that skateboard. He loved it. I mean, he tried so long to just achieved so many tricks, and he was so dedicated. And I mean, he was smart, but he wasn't like, I guess, dedicated. He didn't apply himself that way. So he pushed himself into this sport he loved. He was very athletic. I mean, just funny guy. I mean, he made us laugh over everything. There were so many pranks and things that he did just to make us all laugh. We lived in different parts of Arizona. When we were in the Phoenix area, we lived in a place called Surprise, and he made friends very quickly with other skater kids, and he was constantly gone and just skating, just living life. They would rollerblade, they would skate, they would just have fun. I think at first he was a very withdrawn person. And then once he really started to find the sport he loved, he became very funny. Like, he was just a very funny guy. And then when we moved, we ended up moving to Wilcox, which is where my parents still reside, which is where it happened. That was when we really got to see, like, the more adult version of his funny. He always would make us laugh. And I will say that he was the kid that we're like, you're never going to move out of mom and dad's house. You're never going to leave. As a sister, you know, I'd be like, he's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you still here? You need to move away. And he'd be like, no, I'm comfortable. You know, I'm good. I don't need to rush away. And he just made friends everywhere. He just was a good, good guy. He always had the best smile. And everybody said that. I mean, girls in the cheerleading team would come up and ask me. And I were younger, I'd be a sophomore and they'd be freshmen. And Adam was a junior and they'd come up and say, do you think Adam would like me? Or, and I would laugh and I would come back and I'd be like, I don't know, maybe go ask him. And I would come after school and tell Adam, dude, get these girls off me. I don't want to talk to them about you. And he'd laugh and laugh. He'd be like, whatever. And he wasn't like into that. He wasn't into getting all the girls. Like, he was just the friend. Like, he wanted to be friends with everybody.
Adam came from a large family, but was very close in age to his sisters, Cassandra and Ariana. Ariana told us about her memories of Adam.
My older brother was more like the cooler one, so I kind of followed in his lead. He listened to more punk rock music, so I did too. He started skateboarding. I thought it was cool, so I started skateboarding too. He was just always around, you know, like we were both pretty into video games, so I'd always be hanging out with him playing like Guitar Hero or something. He was a fun-loving guy. Anywhere he went, he was always trying to, you know, kind of be a show-off, always trying to do backflips and just always trying to be like the life of the party. He liked making jokes and, you know, he liked trying to make people smile. Always really into skating and video games. I know it was just because, like, when we were younger, we didn't really, you know, our family didn't have very much money growing up. So I know he was asked to join the wrestling team in high school a few times, but we just didn't have the money to do that. We were like a basic, regular Mexican family, you know, pretty close. My mom always had us going to church, even though my brother Adam wasn't really a churchy person. He would go on occasion. You know, on the weekends, we'd always cook out.
Adam's mom, Grace, explained that Adam was different from other guys his age, and his kind nature always shined through.
That was Adam, you know. He was just, he always tried to keep the peace. He was just a beautiful child, and he was very respectful. When something would go wrong with anything that was electrical, he would disassemble it, fix it, and then assemble it back. That's how Adam was, you know. He was smart and loving. He would just, like, be himself. And he was different, you know. I mean, he wore his own style, you know. He wore his tennis shoes that were, you know, like Converse, and then the shorts. My brother, when he came from the military, he left all his army clothes here. And what Adam did was he would cut them into shorts, you know, that were lower than the knee. He loved them, you know. He loved wearing canvas.
Adam had big dreams of skateboarding professionally. And while that never ended up working out, he found other work here and there. Ariana told us more.
He was really into skateboarding, and we didn't have money for a camera. So he would always want me to be out there to, like, see him land a trick so that he'd be like, she was there. It's proof. It happened. There was even a point where he had me and a couple of his friends trying to record him when they did get a hold of a camera because they wanted to submit skate videos to get sponsored. To him, I could tell he never gave up on it. He really thought he was going to be something big in the skateboarding scene. He was always skating around. Whenever we'd go to, like, Phoenix, he'd go and skate around popular places to try to see if there would be people there that could maybe spot him or see him or discover him or something. I remember he was working for a little bit as a fuel attendant at the local TA. And then for a while, he was working with my dad, and he was helping them with construction. And I remember he was really proud of that because there would be, like, times where we'd go and pick them up, and Adam would be all like, you see that? The steps to the front door? I did that.
Cassandra explained that Adam felt like he was on track for a career in skateboarding when a family tragedy cut his dreams short.
We didn't grow up with a lot of money. We always struggled. We were always every month to month. Just it was very hard for us. We were the food stamp family and the food bank family. Like it was really hard for us. And as kids, we really didn't understand We just knew that this is the way it was. But Adam really loved to skate, and he would beg my parents to take him to these places. Well, there was a scout from, I think it was Van, that was looking at my brother when we were in the Phoenix area. He came home and he told my family about it, and he was so excited. And well, unfortunately, my grandmother had just passed away, and we weren't doing good with finances. So we ended up having to move to the Wilcox area, to her old ranch, which is what my mother inherited. And again, I wasn't in the conversation. I was young. I really don't know how my mom broke it to him, but I do know Adam's perspective of it. And he had a lot of anger towards my parents because he felt like his dream was ripped away. He used to say, I'm never going to forgive mom. You know, she took away my dream. And we would tell him, Adam, it wasn't her fault that we had to move away. You know, I wish that you would have been able to see the scout before, but he had a lot of inner anger in that subject because he loved it and he was good at it. And he felt like there was an opportunity there and it got cut short.
In the weeks leading up to his disappearance, Adam and his girlfriend split up. Ariana explained how this affected Adam.
He had just broken up with his girlfriend and we were all just kind of giving him his space because he was the kind of guy who wore his heart on his sleeve. So when he got sad, he got really obviously sad. So we had to give him some time and he was very, very sad during those last 2 weeks. That's why when we heard that there was a party, we were like, yeah, let's go party. We like to party. Why not?
Cassandra moved to California several years before Adam disappeared. She kept trying to get Adam to move out there with her, and he seemed to be warming up to the idea. Tragically, just a couple of weeks before Adam went missing, they lost their 7-month-old nephew, Caleb, in a devastating accident. Cassandra flew home to attend the funeral, and this was the last time she saw her brother.
I hadn't been home in, I think, like 2 years, and I ended up flying home for the funeral for Caleb. So that was the first time that I'd been home in a while, and this was 2 weeks before Adam's disappearance, so I did see Adam. So, and Wilcox is where I grew up. It's a small little town, and it was a decent little, I guess, small community, but now, I mean, when I was there, it was going downhill. There were a lot of tweakers then, and I moved away, and I would only hear that it got worse and worse. I mean, seeing them for this funeral was extremely hard because I never got to meet the baby. My sister, Adriana, took it very hard. She used to watch him every day. She babysat for him. And Adam, I remember him being there. I remember him being upset and being mad, but he's always been that way. He doesn't handle funerals very well, so I don't really remember him much for the funeral. I do remember we went back to the house afterwards. I think I stayed for about 5 days. Going back to him and my mom when my nephew passed away, it was a good moment for my mom and him because my mom really had a hard time with the baby dying. And Adam, he was there for her. He held her and he like got her up from the floor and held her and let her cry. And he just said, it's okay, mom. You know, he's good. He's in heaven now. And my mom told me that that was like a breakthrough for them because they had these differences over the past. And that was for her a breakthrough for him and her to have like a bonding moment.
On the morning of Saturday, September 13th, 2008, Adam got up and was chatting with his little sisters. This is when he got the idea to attend the party later that night.
That morning, I remember that me and him were sitting there, and like I said, we like to smoke cigarettes. So we're sitting there and we're sharing our morning cigarette, and we woke up pretty late. It'd be around like 10:30. My younger sister had already been up, and she had been already texting some of her friends from Bowie that this guy Armando was going to be having a party because it was his birthday. And we're like, all right, cool. We kind of knew Armando, and Eden knew a bunch of people from Bowie because a couple of years before she had gone to the Bowie school for 1 year. So she knew a bunch of people from Bowie. We were like, all right, cool. You know, and I was like all telling Adam, you know, I was joking around, you know, kid sister stuff, you know, like maybe now you can get a better girl, you know. The only reason why he would have even known Armando was because my sister was friends with Armando's baby mom. And, you know, she'd be like, hey, I'm going to go and hang out. And then Adam was like, oh, yeah, I do know this guy from school. And then they started talking. And that's about as far as how he had known him.
Cassandra explained more about the area where the party was set to take place later that evening.
In Wilcox, it's just a really small town and people party in the middle of nowhere. Like there's different areas. There's the dunes And this specific location was called the Loop. I've never been to the Loop. My sister had to explain to me where it was at. Different areas. And they're all just in the middle of nowhere. It's a desert. So I'm not sure if you have local hangouts in your area or town or stuff, but this specific location was called the Loop. And it was, a known area.
Ariana planned to go to this party with her brother, but things didn't work out as she had hoped. Ariana told us how they ended up getting split up.
Towards the end of the night, we ended up started having plans with his friends because he had a friend, Levi, that lived down the street. And, you know, him and Adam would always hang out together. And we were all just talking about like, yeah, we're going to probably go to this party. Who are you going to go with? And there were a couple other kids there, little Gary and Cody and little Kino. Cody was the one with the car. And he was like, "Oh, yeah, if you guys want to go to that party, I'll take you guys to the party." So we were like, all right, cool. You know, and it was a car that only fit five. So Cody was driving and Levi was in the front, and then it was Adam, Kino, and Gary in the back. And I was going to go with them. I wanted to shove in, but then he was like, "Oh, aren't you going to go with Eden?" And I was like, "All right, yeah, I guess I could wait with Eden." So I stayed.
Adam's youngest sister, Eden, had also planned to attend the party with her friend and was disappointed when her plans fell through.
I was supposed to go to that party. I remember my friends talking about it. My friend Alicia, she was supposed to pick me up. I couldn't go by myself, my mom said, because I was too young. So my older sister, Ariana, was supposed to come with me, but Alicia never texted me back to pick me up. So I was like, well, that sucks. My brother went and I kind of wanted to go too. There's not much to do in Wilcox, except everybody would just like throw their own little kickback parties.
Adam rode away from his home in a red Plymouth Neon with four other guys. Cody, the driver, Kino, Gary, and Levi. They took the back roads to get out to the Loop because Cody's taillights were out and he didn't want to get pulled over. Adam and Kino sat in the back seat and drank some Budweisers along the way. It was still light out when they picked Adam up, but by the time they arrived at the party, it was dark. After they got there, Cody and Levi went home, leaving Adam, Gary, and Kino at the Loop. According to Kino, there were at least 20 people at the party when they arrived. They were all drinking and listening to music. Ariana immediately got a bad feeling after she watched Adam ride off in the car with some of their neighborhood friends. Something just didn't feel right.
Actually, after he left, like not even 5 minutes, I don't want to sound weird, but I would call myself a little intuitive. I already had a bad feeling in my gut. So, like a little after they had left, I had called the only guy with the phone, which was Levi. And I was like, "Hey, Levi, you know, my spidey senses, they're tingling." He was like, "Oh, what's up?" And I was like, "Something's wrong. How's Adam?" And he was like, "Oh, my mom called me. So I'm in trouble and I have to go home." And I was like, "All right, cool." And he's also Cody. Cody is taking me home. And we left Adam, Kino, and little Gary at the cattle guards with Armando, because Armando was there, and they hopped in the back of Armando's truck. And I was like, "All right, then, cool." I was like, "Oh, I know Armando. Adam should be all right. And he's there with two other people." And he was like, "All right." And then I was like, "All right, cool." And I was like, "Nobody else there has a phone." And he was like, "No, not that I know of." And I was like, "All right, then." That was the last that I had heard from anybody that day as from that party. And then the people that were supposed to come pick up me and my sister never came. So we never went.
Adam's friend Kino told investigators that he left the party with a couple of girls around 1 a.m., and that Adam was still there along with Gary and some other people. That was the last time that Kino reports seeing Adam. The following morning, Adam's family woke up to find that he had never returned home from the party. They were concerned, but hoped that he had just crashed at a friend's house and would return shortly. Then, a vehicle pulled up out front, and things took a scary turn.
The next morning, I woke up so I could smoke my morning cigarette, and I was out there, and I saw a car pull up into the driveway, and it was, the guy's name was Daniel, and little Gary was in there. And little Gary had burns from his chin all the way up to his ear on one side of his face, and he was in a lot of pain. He couldn't even open his mouth to talk to me all the way. I remembered walking up to him, and I was like, "Man, dude, what happened, man? That's horrible." And I was like, "So where's Adam?" And he goes, "What do you mean? Adam's here." And I was like, "No, Adam was with you last night." And he was like, "Ah." And he was, for being early in the morning, he already had a 40, of beer in his hand. He had cracked that 40. He took a long drink off of it, and then he took another deep breath and was like, oh, well, Adriana, if Adam comes back, if he comes back, tell him thank you because I think he saved my life. And then I was like, what does that mean? And he was like, oh, if he comes back, just tell him thank you because I think he saved my life. And then he nods to the guy that's driving, and Daniel looks back at him. He was like, okay, then you're done. He was like, yep. And they just pull back and they drive away. So I went inside and I told my mom what I had heard.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Adam's family was extremely concerned for his safety. It wasn't like him to stay out all night without letting his family know his plans. And then having his friend show up with burns saying Adam saved his life was frightening. What had happened at this party? They contacted the Cochise County Sheriff's Office to report him missing, but they were told that they couldn't make a missing report yet.
We wanted to report him missing the very next day. As soon as little Gary told us that, we wanted to report him missing because Adam's not the kind of person. He was a mama's boy. Even if he was in town going to a friend's house and they were going to go and like grab food at McDonald's, he would call my mom and be like, hey, I just want you to know I'm not going to be there. We're going to go and grab food and then I'll be right back there. He always let us know where he was. They didn't let us report him though. They said that since he was 21 years old and obviously an adult, you can't say that he's missing. If he's just been missing for one night, he's an adult and he can make his own decision. He doesn't have to tell his parents where he's at. We had to wait exactly 48 hours.
By this time, Cassandra had returned to California after attending her nephew's funeral back home in Arizona. She told us how she learned that Adam was missing.
I come back home. I'm back in California and I'm working. I worked at the time for a place called Harris Ranch, a restaurant and hotel. I was in the marketing department and my mom called me. Thankfully, I had my cell phone with me at that time and I answer and I'm not thinking anything. I just say, hey, mom. And she's like, Mija, your brother didn't come home from a party last night. He didn't come home. And she sounds distraught and worried. And she says, I have a really bad feeling. And I remember telling my mom, no, mom, it's okay. Like Adam probably just went to a friend's house. It's all right. And she's like, no, Mija, I have a really bad feeling. And I said, no, don't do that to yourself, mom. We just lost Caleb. You're probably still upset, but you're thinking the worst. It's okay, Mom. Calm down. It's going to be okay. God is good. He will take care of him. He's going to be fine, Mom. He probably just went to his friend's house, Mom. And she said, no. No matter what, even if he comes home really late, even if it's very, very late, or even if he goes to a friend's house, he always, always tells me, Mom, I'm home, or Mom, I'm here. He always tells me. And I said, Mom, just calm down. It's okay. And somehow I got my mom to rationalize with, okay, don't think that yet. And I remember it took me a few minutes to calm her down and to say, don't think. She's like, you know, you're right. He's probably okay. But I can't lie to you that when I got off that phone call, I knew something bad had happened. I got off the phone and I knew it. I felt terrible. I felt, oh no, something's wrong.
Cassandra became more alarmed when she learned that Adam had left home without his phone or wallet.
When he ended up ultimately leaving, he just grabbed his sweater, but he left his wallet and his phone. So he never took them. And that was really big for me when my mom told me that he never took his phone and he never took his wallet. And I was like, what? Why would he do that? And so she explained to me, well, it was because he wasn't going to go. And then they ended up saying, come on, let's go. Just come on. Let's go. It'll be fun. Like, you never get out anymore. And you know, meet up somebody or whatever. All that went down, I guess. So they left. They went to this party, this loop.
As the days passed with no word from Adam, his family went out to the area where the party was held the night that Adam disappeared and were puzzled by what was going on.
There is a road. It's actually off of Blue Sky Road, a little outside of Wilcox. It would be east of it. A lot of things that happened around his disappearance were extremely suspicious, including the couple of days afterwards when we started actually looking for him out by the loop where he went missing. The Border Patrol was out there picking up trash and cleaning up the entire area, which is completely unheard of. They're like, no, this is part of our job. We are specifically sent out here to clean this area. That is unheard of, completely unheard of. My father had seen this and he had said that he went up and questioned them and they said, no, this is what we were sent here to do. And we have to clean this area and you can't be here while we're cleaning it. I just know that everything about that whole thing is really fishy and the town knows who did it. The cops know who did it. The sheriffs know who did it. And the guy who's responsible has ties to a lot of strong people out here, and they can get away with it.
Grace knew that something had happened to her son. This was just too out of character. To her, the police seemed disinterested in looking for him, so she felt like it was her job to start searching for answers.
He never came back. That's when I said, no, this isn't like Adam. I felt that I had to be the detective, that I had to be the one to be looking because, too long. So my nephew took me over there to where it happened on Blue Sky Road. I went over there and I looked for him. There was a lot of, you know, the party leftovers, bottles, the trash. I know that I saw a lot of shell casing. It's really weird. All of a sudden, come Monday morning, you know, there's me and my husband. We went over there, and the city had people cleaning. I've never seen anything like that happen. I've never seen that they clean up. And this is out in the country. You know, this is out of town. That time that me and my husband went, that we saw that, then in the following day we came back, it looked different. It wasn't like the way it was before. Everything was cleaned up.
We were able to obtain Adam's missing persons file from the Cochise County Sheriff's Office. In reading through Adam's file, we found that an investigator mentioned this cleaning of the party area in their notes. The investigator arrived on scene and found county employees there getting ready to leave after cleaning up the party. Adam's family thought this was odd, and it appears the investigator did too. The report says, I didn't know that county employees went out to these partying spots and cleaned up the areas. It seemed unusual. In the file, it never explains why county employees were out there cleaning or who had sent them there to do so. During those first few days, Eden remained hopeful that her brother would return. But that hope began to fizzle out as they heard more stories about the night that Adam disappeared.
For a good week, we had like high hopes. Maybe they just have him, or maybe they're just torturing him or something.
But then we heard like too many stories, like the well ones and stuff like that afterwards. And we just kept hearing too many like death stories. And so we were like, oh man, like there's too much talk of death. So we kind of lost hope after, well, I kind of lost hope after like probably like the second week.
4 days after Adam was last seen, parents of one of Adam's friends alerted the police that they had been out searching for him on their own along Highway 186. When they came upon a 30-gallon black plastic trash can that had its lid taped shut with clear tape, there was a strong odor coming from the trash can, which was concerning to them. Officers took photos of the can before opening it to see what was inside, but they didn't find Adam. It was just full of household trash and rotting meat. Cassandra recalled one effort the police made to get people talking.
The authorities get involved. I do know that at some point they shut down the school for the day. They take in, I want to say, 50 to 70 kids for questioning. I know that they closed down the school that day. My mom said, they closed the school. They pulled in a bunch of kids and they questioned everybody. And I was like, they did? And of course you get excited. Something's happening. Like, what? This is great news, you know? And of all this stuff, the investigators come to my parents and they tell them, we still don't have anything. No one wants to talk. No one will say anything. And I'm like, does this not enough for you to see that they're scared? They obviously have seen something, or they know of something, or they heard, and they're all scared. All of them don't want to speak up, and the whole town, what is that telling you? What is it telling you? Like, please, like, don't just let it go cold. And I mean, it went cold and then it would get hot and then we'd get cold and another investigator would get on it and they'd reopen it and my parents would have to relive it again. And it would just go cold again because nothing was there and no one would say anything and there wasn't proof and there was only rumors.
Investigators spoke to many students at the local high school, some who had attended the party and others who had not. And this seems to have complicated things. Every case has rumors, but the rumor mill in this case seemed to be fueled by kids who wanted to appear cool because they knew something. One teen was telling people that she knew what happened to Adam, and that she wasn't going to tell the cops because she wasn't raised that way, and that they were going to blame someone else for it so her friends wouldn't get in trouble. No matter what the cops tried to do, she wasn't telling. She was also telling other students that she knew his body was disposed of or buried in the sand dunes in the nearby town of Bowie. Investigators questioned this student and advised her that giving false or misleading information or obstructing an investigation is a crime. She admitted to them that she was simply bragging and trying to be cool when she said those things and didn't really know anything about what happened to Adam. This was just one of many rumors that would surface about Adam's fate, and only made it harder to discern fact from fiction. Some people said Adam had made someone mad, or that he was killed over someone else's drug debt, stories shifting and shaping like whisper down the lane. Other stories came to light about there being a gun at the party. People were reportedly just shooting it into the desert night for fun. If a fight did break out at the party, could Adam have been shot? Or could an accident have occurred with the reckless shooting by drunk teens and young adults? Officers did search the area of the party. In late September, the Cochise County Search and Rescue Team went out to the site. Teams were sent out with specific instructions to look for shell casings, possibly a gun, any disturbance that could indicate a shallow grave, and the clothing that Adam was wearing. The team searched a 4-mile radius and nothing of significance was recovered. One team found a depression in the ground, and the location was marked to be searched with cadaver dogs at a later time. An ATV team rode out to check some mine shafts, but they didn't make it before bad weather began coming in. About a week later, another search was conducted in the area of a golf course, where it was rumored that Adam had been killed. Well, another team went back to the party spot with cadaver dogs, and they checked the depression noticed in the previous search. These searches again came up empty. On October 20th, 2008, an aerial search was conducted. Cochise County Sheriff's Office detectives, along with Border Patrol agents, did a flyover of specific areas that Adam may have been in. When they flew over the Loop area where the party was held, one detective noticed an indentation or hole that looked man-made. The following day, they went out to that location and found the hole. It was man-made and was approximately 2 feet wide, 4 feet long, and 2 feet deep. To them, it appeared as though someone had begun digging with a shovel due to the straight sides, and then stopped before the hole was complete. There didn't seem to be anything buried in that spot. One investigator theorized that someone may have started to dig there and then noticed how close it was to the road, and decided to stop. Investigators removed some dirt from the hole and found a light blue plastic handle. It looked like the kind you would see on a large Rubbermaid type of container that may have broken off when the container was removed from the hole and fallen in where it was partially covered by loose dirt. While they were checking this location, they also spotted a wadded up piece of duct tape. Investigators collected the duct tape and the plastic handle for further testing. It's unclear from reading Adam's file what the results were of the testing done on those items. Another lead was reported in January of 2009. A person who had been out looking for firewood came upon an open water well pit. When they looked down, they saw bones, plastic, and a mattress that looked burned. Investigators secured the area, and one went down into the well and began removing the items, one layer at a time. The bones ended up being canine bones, and this was yet another lead that quickly fizzled out. After Adam disappeared, his family began hearing that some of the people at the party that night had strong ties to the drug world. 6 months later, in February of 2009, several people were arrested on charges unrelated to Adam, based on leads they had uncovered during the search for him. While they seized drugs and got several people off the streets who had open warrants, no one was willing to speak about what happened to Adam, if they even knew anything at all.
When a lot of the investigations into Adam did start going on, it did actually end up busting a lot of cartel drug marijuana busts and thousands of pounds.
Ariana told us that while Adam was known to occasionally smoke marijuana for recreational purposes, that he wasn't involved with dealing or drug cartels. It seemed like a huge stretch to his family that he could have done something to anger them.
Eden was still in school, and I remember her later on that year, she was in there, and you know how like the school will have like a drug auditorium meeting where like, don't do drugs, this and this can happen. She said that they had actually put Adam's picture up and said, with the investigation of Adam, dealing with the drug cartel leading to so-and-so much, this is why you should stay away from drugs. And the funny thing is that Adam, he may have smoked weed on occasion. He doesn't do any of that.
Ever since Adam disappeared, his family has gotten information from locals about what happened to him, and it's hard for them to sift through and figure out what pieces are the truth.
Well, I've been getting a lot of messages from people in town with what they have heard, and what they have heard, all the things that they have heard are simply horrific things that just give me nightmares. And sometimes you're like, that sounds like a plot out of a really bad horror movie. But then at the same time, you don't know. And I know it's really cheesy to say, but like how people always say, always tell the people that you love them before they leave, because you never know when you might, if it's like the last time you could see them. I didn't say the greatest thing, and that haunts me to this day. But the things that people say, the ones that I can always hear is, go, you should go check the wells. And they beat Adam up and they threw his body in a well, or they beat him up and then they dragged him down the road, and then they cut his body apart and they put it in barrels of acid from a rundown power plant in Bowie. One involves him. He wasn't a big fan on harder drugs. And I could see him doing this in the situation from what I've heard, that there was somebody with a tray of harder drugs. I'm not sure if it was cocaine or meth, but that they had a big tray of it. And that, you know, he came up and was like, oh, I don't do any of that shit. And he knocked the whole tray over. And after a few weeks after he had went missing, I was really depressed. And I had a couple of friends at the time, and they were in college in Tucson. So they were like, hey, do you want us to go over there and pick you up? So, you know, you could be comforted right now. We had already heard about your brother. And that's the thing that I hate, is that everybody seems to have heard what happened, but we don't know what happened. So to hear so many people say, we're so sorry about what happened to Adam, I always say, well, what did you hear? Because we don't know. But we went over there, and my one friend, Rebecca, Becky, she was making phone calls because she was friends with a lot of the seedier people from town over here. And she was calling around like, hey, do you know where Adam is? And she had them all on speaker because, you know, she wanted me to be able to hear it too. And she had called this boy named Donnie. And she was like, hey, Donnie, what's up? And he was like, not much. Becky, what's going on? And she was like, oh, well, where's Adam? And he goes, what? And she was like, where's Adam? He was like, what do you mean? Adam Castillo, where is he? Oh, let's just say that there was a lot of coke at that party and he fucked up. He's gone. Forget about him. And then she goes, don't say that. His sister's sitting right next to me. And he was all, well, tell her to forget about it too. He's gone. He fucked up. Like I said, there's so many other stories. That's one of the stories. And then it's like, it feels like it's just one big game of telephone. For all you know, what you've heard has already changed and been morphed into something completely different than what was originally said. But when all the stories are coming back so horrible, you kind of have to start accepting the fact that some of that might be true.
There was another story that the family has been told. If you remember earlier, Ariana mentioned the one guy showing up the next morning with a burn on his face.
From little Gary that was there, the one with his face burnt, his older sister ended up messaging me, and she was saying, like, my younger brother was there. She was telling me that little Gary was there and that he ended up getting pushed into the fire and that Adam pulled him out of the fire and that they got a wet towel or a shirt or something and they put it on his face and they laid him in the back of a car. And that later on, it was just like that they had all gotten mad because little Gary was supposed to be pushed into the fire for a reason. And little Gary was always dealing with some form of drug trafficking or something. That's why to me, it would be relevant that he would come back the next day and say, tell him thank you for saving my life.
There are various stories in the file about Gary falling into the fire or being pushed. Several people say that Gary was extremely intoxicated and fell into the fire, while others claim there was an argument that broke out and he was pushed, or that Gary owed someone money and he was pushed into the fire to teach him a lesson. Adam's friend Kino told investigators that he watched Gary stumble and fall into the fire. He and Adam helped him out and into the back of a pickup truck because he was so drunk. Gary told investigators that he wasn't pushed, he fell. But Gary's memory of that night is foggy because he passed out. Much of what he recounted to the police seemed to be from what others had told him about that night. He remembered Adam helping him into the truck, but that was the last time he saw him. Gary passed out in the truck and woke up the next morning alone. He had his cell phone and called for a ride, seemingly unaware that something had happened to Adam. Cassandra gave us some more background information about the friendship between Gary and Adam.
Gary was he was kind of a screw-up kid. Like, he just got into a lot of trouble and he did a lot of bad shit and he would smoke pot and lots of times I think he was dabbling into other things too. And Adam helped him out, you know? And so in my eyes, I felt like Adam was mentoring him, you know, he would skate with him and he would, when he'd hang out with Adam, he would be a better kid. Like Gary wouldn't get into trouble, you know, but he didn't always hang out with Adam. He would kind of withdraw from Adam and go back and do bad stuff again. And then Adam would kind of bring him back again and be like, hey dude, cut it out, you know? But they were good friends. Adam, for some reason, Adam was really loyal to him and he just felt like he had like a good friendship with him. And Gary was loyal to Adam too. So they just had a bond and we would like, we didn't get it. We just thought it was weird. But in the beginning, it was weird. But after the years, we just felt just accepted. Like Adam and Gary were together all the time. Like they were good friends.
The Easter after Adam disappeared, Cassandra returned to Wilcox from California to spend the holiday with her family. It was during this trip that she spotted Gary and tracked him down to try to get some answers out of him.
There's a rumor that Gary owed a debt or something, that Gary was in trouble with Armando or something. So Gary got thrown into the fire, as gruesome as it is, and that Adam jumped in and pulled him out. And without a doubt, I see my brother doing that. That's my brother. That is my brother. I see him 100% jumping in that fire and taking him out. And I even hear him saying, what are you doing? What the hell are you doing? You know, and I could see him doing that. And so the story I heard was that Adam jumped in and saved Gary and gave him like, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you doing that? Like, you don't fucking do that. You're going to kill him. And that somehow Adam got the heat now. That was the story, that it was originally on Gary, and then it got turned to Adam. How do you take someone's life because of somebody else's debt? For Easter, they also do the big Easter hunt in the park and stuff. There's a huge gazebo that they go to, and that's pretty a big thing there in Wilcox. But I remember us going there for a function, and we were leaving. I was dressed in this stupid dress, but as we were leaving, we get in the car, and I'm driving for my mom, my mom's old car. We're just making regular small talk banter, and I see Gary in the car, in a car, and he's driving, and I get overtaken with like emotion, and I start following him. And my mom is like, "What are you doing?" And I said, I gotta stop him. And my mom's like, calm down. I go, I'm gonna kill him. I can't. How does he not know? And my mom's like, calm down. And I'm driving, and I'm even like almost to hit him. I'm right behind him, and I'm honking at him, and I'm pulling my arm out, and I'm saying, pull over. And at first he doesn't want to, and I keep going like honking, and I'm like, pull over. And he finally pulls over in an apartment complex, and I get out and I push him on the car, and he's crying. He's like immediately sobbing. And I say, how do you not know what happened? How do you not know? And he's crying. He's like, I'm sorry. I was drunk. I'm so sorry. I don't know anything. I wish I knew. Like, how do you think I feel? He was my best friend. And I don't know. I was so drunk. He kept saying, I was so drunk. And I don't know. And I said, well, what happened? He said, we were there. And, you know, and he said that he was so drunk, and he didn't want to talk to me. He was like wanting to leave the whole time. He was pissed that I even got him cornered. I told him, you got to tell me, like, I'm not leaving here. Like, I'm, you're lucky I don't kick your ass right now. And I'm in this stupid dress. He tells me that he remembers being so drunk. He remembers that Adam told him that he had to lay down, sleep it off, like, go sleep it off. You need to chill out. You need to cool it. Like, you're too drunk. This is again what he's telling me. I don't believe him for anything. He told me it was Cody's car. He said, I lay down in the car. I don't believe this is what happened at all. Clearly, because Ariana told me that Cody and Levi left.
All of the eyewitness accounts in the police file also support that Cody left after dropping the three friends off.
So he said that he was laying down in the back seat of the car. As he was laying down, he's laying down on his back. He's looking out the door, right? Because the door's open where his feet are. And that Adam is standing there. And he says he remembers that Mozo is standing with him.
Mozo, or Jose, is a friend of Armando, the man who threw the party. His name becomes important later on in the story.
And I said, oh, okay. And he said, that's all I remember. I remember him there telling me, you need to sleep it off. Just chill out. Just go to sleep. Go to sleep. You're fine. And then that's it. He says he remembers he woke up the next morning there at the loop in a truck. He told me it was Toby's truck. He told me I woke up in Toby's truck with no shoes. And I said, what? And again, I was pissed, and I said some vulgar language, and what the F, like, how do you wake up in a truck? Like, you were sleeping in the car. How does that? I don't know, but that's what happened. I woke up in the truck. I had no shoes on. I was by myself. I woke up. No one was around. And I said, and then what? He's like, I walked home. I said, what do you mean you walked home? He said, yeah, I walked home. I said, Gary, how do you walk home? It's out of town. You don't walk home. He said, I found my shoes. And I walked home.
According to several witness statements, including Gary's own interviews with police, he didn't walk home from the loop that morning. Instead, he called someone to come pick him up. It's unclear why Gary's statements to Cassandra differ from what he's told the police.
I want to say that he said he called, or he went to my parents' house, and he asked where Adam was. He assumed he was home. Where's Adam? He's not here. He's with you. And that he, I guess, knew then that something terrible had happened or something. And I didn't believe. I said, and then what? And he just was crying and staying quiet. And he said, that's all I know. I wish I knew more, Tirsa. I wish I could say more, Tirsa. I feel terrible, Tirsa. He was my best friend. You know, he's sobbing. And I don't know what to do. I want to hurt him. And I also feel sad for him because maybe he really doesn't know. And I'm like, Lord, please help me. What am I doing, God? What am I doing? And I get back in the car and I drive away and I tell my mom, like, I'm crying. And my mom's like, what happened? And I can't even speak. I'm just crying. And when we get to the house, like 10, 15 minutes later, I tell her what happened.
And she's like, calm down, Mija. It's okay. It's okay. And, you know, and I'm just praying like, Lord, what do I do? Lord, what do I do? And I never see Gary again.
It's hard to know if Gary knows more than he's letting on, or if that whole night is a drunken blur for him. Investigators did push Gary. They believe that he was scared, but he never budged on his story about that night.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. A lot of the stories that the family has been told circle back to Armando, the man who was throwing the party that night. Ariana told us more.
One girl specifically messaged me that she was dating Armando at the time. And that was one of the ones where I went, okay, then I guess this is real. If she heard it straight from the mouth of the bird, then there's no denying it. She had messaged me saying, hey, I used to date Armando, and him and Mozo used to always get drunk. And when he'd get really drunk, he'd just sit there and start laughing like, hey, do you remember that time that we killed Adam and buried him out in the desert? Wasn't that funny? And to just read that through a message. And then afterwards her saying, I always thought he was just talking bullshit. But, you know, now that I see you're looking for him, maybe it wasn't. I don't know if it's true or not. But the fact that she heard it directly from the mouth of the people who were accused of this, the top suspects in Adam's case, to hear that directly from their mouth just crushed my heart. They've all believed that he has been dead since the very beginning just because of how everything has been. And as soon as certain people get mixed, brought up into the story, the detectives change. Or as soon as the detectives start seeing the obvious, which is what we've all kind of heard from the beginning, that Armando gave the word and he had Toby and Mozo do the deed. And yet, since they're really good at keeping quiet, nothing can be done about it. And I remember the very last detective that I personally spoke with told me, you got to get public pressure or nothing's going to happen. I know that they have questioned everybody that was involved. I know that they've, from going around town, me and my younger sister have went and asked not the nicest of people in town and ended up in some weird part of town just to follow up on a few questions. But I know that they ended up searching a couple of vehicles. I know they searched Armando's truck, and I know that they searched somebody else's car that was there. I'm not entirely sure on the name, but it's because of the rumor that he had taken off in a red Honda Civic with a bunch of girls. And I know that they had searched a vehicle that matched that description as well. They did end up saying a lot of things about, basically, from what they had already asked or went around town and asked questions from everybody else, they had come up with the same exact stories that I've even been getting recently. It's always the same story. It always goes back to the same three people, but nothing can be done. Armando Toby Jose, whose nickname is Mozo. Mozo, like a bear in Spanish.
Cassandra explained what she knows of the relationship between Adam and Armando.
Armando, he is involved, was involved with bad stuff. When I was in high school with him, I believe he was in the same grade as me because I had some classes with him. He was the bad kid, you know, he was the cool guy, you know, because he's in bigger shit, you know, he's involved in bigger stuff. And so this party I had heard was Armando's party. And that threw me off because Adam never like hung around with him like that. I think in high school a few times, I don't ever remember Adam associating with him outside of like our high school years. Like I would never see him even hear or mention him, say that name. Like it would be like, oh yeah, I knew Armando. I went to school with him. It was never like, oh yeah, we hang out or we talk or anything like that. It was nothing like that. It threw me off huge. I knew that he had a right-hand man, I guess, of one of his best friends or whatever, but they call him his right-hand man. They call him Mozo. I never knew him to have this guy around when I was in high school with him. But so these guys, another kid is Toby. They say the three of them are involved.
Throughout Adam's file, it's clear that many people suspected Armando and his friends Toby and Jose, or Mozo. One investigator even stated that these three were the main subjects in the investigation into Adam's disappearance. Many of the rumors or stories circulating were about these three men, but none of the stories ever led to finding Adam or any evidence as to what happened to him. Reading their statements to investigators, they seemed to be consistent. They said that they went to the party that night and they were playing music from Armando's truck, and that eventually caused the battery to die. They got a ride back into town to get Toby's truck. They jumped Armando's truck and then Toby's truck died. According to Toby, they hung out and partied until around 2 a.m., and then everyone else bounced. This left Toby, Adam, and Gary as the last three people out at the loop. Gary was passed out in the truck, and Toby was working on getting his truck started. Toby said that a car pulled up and he wasn't paying attention as he was working on the truck, and didn't see what kind of car it was or who was driving. He heard Adam yell, "Awesome," and he got into the car and they drove away. This would be the very last person who admits to seeing Adam that night. Toby said that about an hour later, he began walking home as the sun was coming up. He was going to try to get a new battery for his truck. As he got closer to his residence, a passerby gave him a ride the rest of the way. Toby admitted to the detectives that he did have a gun on him that night, but he also allowed investigators to take his guns and ammunition as part of their investigation. He said that while Gary was being a jerk that night because he was so drunk, that Adam was fine and didn't cause any problems. Jose's interview was consistent with Toby's. He said that he and others left around 2 a.m., leaving Gary, Toby, and Adam at the loop. They promised Adam that they would come back and pick him up, but by the time they dropped the rest of the people off, they were too tired and intoxicated and decided to just go home and go to bed. Armando's stories were also consistent with Jose and Toby. Investigators continued to push the three and also others that they thought might be covering for them or scared of them, and no one ever cracked. We don't know if they could have carefully rehearsed their stories, or if they're simply telling the truth and don't know what happened to Adam. Adam's mom, Grace, told us about a theory she's heard about. Apparently, there were people from various age groups at this party, including some younger teen girls. She was told that some partygoers had slipped the girls drugs, and Adam stepped up to protect the girls, and this may have put his life in danger.
You know that ecstasy pill? And they were giving that to young girls as young as my daughter. They were raping them and doing whatever they wanted to. And he went and told them, and they didn't like that. By what I heard, they said, you know, who are you to say anything? You weren't even invited to this party. So, you know, like I say, you know, my son was different and in a good way.
One mystery of this case is how so many people could have been at the party that night, and no one saw what happened to Adam or who he could have left with. If people know, are they just keeping their mouths shut? Is it possible that no one would have slipped up by now? Grace explained that she got a lead from a young man who had been at the party that night.
He goes, "Well, Mrs. Castillo, all I can say is that we heard three shots, and they got somebody, and they put him into the truck, in the back of the trunk, and then they took him somewhere. That's all I know." I go, "Because everybody started scattering because of the shooting, and they were afraid." And I told him, I said, "Thank you. Thank you for telling me." I go, "Far as anything," I go, "you're the one that has told me more of meaning to me, that it's as important than anything else." And then later on, the stories that started, oh, that they burned him with acid, and that they, you know, they took him to Tucson and this and that. And I'm like, I mean, I would come home and just cry myself and say, how can people be so evil and mean?
One interesting bit of information that we found in Adam's file was about the friend who had dropped him off at the party, Cody. If you remember, Cody didn't stay and drove home after dropping his three friends off. One day after Adam was reported missing, the Department of Public Safety called for a tow after finding Cody's 1995 red Plymouth Neon, abandoned on I-10 near Tucson. Investigators didn't know about this, but they asked Cody where his car was, and he told them that about a week after Adam disappeared, he was driving to Tucson when his car broke down. It was towed, and he said he couldn't afford to fix it, so he and his mother sent the title to Downtown Auto and Towing voluntarily. His mother also confirmed this. When investigators spoke to the manager of Downtown Auto, he said that they were never contacted by the owner of the abandoned Neon, and that they had to apply for an abandoned title on their own. The investigators weren't sure what to make of these conflicting stories surrounding the car, so they asked the manager if they could have permission to search the vehicle, and he said sure, they could examine it inside and out. They processed the vehicle and took photos of all the contents. Later, they showed the photos to Adam's parents, but they didn't recognize anything inside the vehicle as Adam's, or what he was wearing the night he disappeared. We don't know any results of the forensic testing on the car. By all accounts, Cody simply dropped the three off at the party that evening. But after hearing Toby's story about seeing a vehicle pick Adam up in the early morning hours of the 14th, it's understandable that they would be looking for who that could have been, and the conflicting stories about the abandoned car raised some red flags for investigators. As time has gone on with no answers in Adam's case, his family has become frustrated with the seemingly revolving door of detectives and lack of communication about the investigation.
It would always just be the sheriff that would come up, and Adam's case got passed through more than I can count on one hand of detectives within the so many years. I know we haven't seen a detective within like the past 5 years from that.
Eden felt like the police did try hard during the first few years to bring her family some answers, but with a lack of clues, the case has stalled out.
For the first year, they were searching like hard. I don't know what a detective was on it, but they kept bringing us belongings of bodies that they found, like bracelets and t-shirts and stuff like that. And they would ask us, hey, did this belong to him? And they would just like crush me. I'm like, damn, they found this many bodies while looking for my brother. Like the fourth year or something like that, we just kind of like stopped hearing from them. So we had to go to the sheriff's department and ask who was on the case now.
Going all of these years without any answers has taken a toll on Adam's family, but they remain committed to keeping his name out there.
I have three kids. One of them is a boy, and I tell my mom all the time, like, I don't know how you saved. I would be a mess. I would be wrecking havoc everywhere. I would be shouting at the police, and she was very dignified and very classy and just held her own and went, you know, and pleaded for her son in a good, I guess, cordial way. And, you know, there were even times we'd get upset. We'd say, make us think, you know, do something, make a scene. You know, we need to be here. And it just wasn't like that. My mom said, there are things to be done. We've got to do it certain ways. People won't cooperate. And she told everybody, everywhere we'd go, her way of getting it known was
we were at the store or we'd be anywhere, and she would say, have you seen my son? Have you seen this person? She would just tell everybody this picture, and just, it just, that was her way of getting heard. And it was in a much quieter way, I'd say.
Being the youngest, Eden has witnessed how devastating this has been for her parents.
My mom's just, she took it hard the first few years. Like, that's all she could talk about. She's broken. It was just like emotionally draining for her. She even like aged way worse just because of that. Same with my dad. He never used to have gray hair. Now he has gray hair and losing some. I remember me and my sister were fighting one time, and my dad was just like, he was crying, and he walks up to me and my sister, and he's like, why are you guys fighting? Like, you guys shouldn't be fighting. And he just started crying, made us cry. So we just learned to not fight like that anymore.
Ariana remains hopeful that someone will come forward with some answers about what happened to Adam.
Adam was generally a good person. He, especially since we grew up the way that we did, we never liked to see anybody. Like, if we saw somebody on the side of the road, he would actually be one of the first people to be like, hey, Mom, we should make that guy a sandwich. He was always just such a genuinely good person. It's just so hard to think that someone who would care so much, even from the stories that they had said that he had helped Gary, he helped someone to the last day that he was alive. And I really hope that someone, anybody who knew anything, would actually just come forward. I actually had my cousin, she was going around asking questions, and she actually ended up getting threatened. And she had been told to stop asking questions.
So what happened to Adam Castillo after he left his home on September 13th, 2008, to attend a party in the desert? How is it that so many people were there that night and no one has come forward to say what happened? We know that various stories have circulated about Adam doing things that made people mad. He helped a friend up out of the fire. And there's been various stories about whether he was pushed or he fell. Some have said that he knocked over a tray of drugs, and others have said that he stood up to someone who was drugging young teens. The thing is, though, no one ever seems to say that they directly witnessed Adam doing anything to anger someone. Everyone described him as a chill guy. All of these vicious rumors have circulated, but they tend to be from someone who heard it from someone else. And the investigators never tracked down anyone who had actually seen harm come to Adam. Did Adam anger someone so much that they decided to take his life? Or could something else have happened that night, like some sort of accident? Was Toby telling the truth when he said he saw a car pick up Adam in the early morning hours of the 14th? If that is, in fact, true, that would mean something happened to Adam after leaving the party. Who would have picked him up? And why haven't they come forward? Or was Toby making that up, and he, Armando, and Jose had something to do with it? Is there a kernel of truth among the stories? Or has the disappearance of this vibrant young man more than 12 years ago become something of local lore, and the stories are all just rumors? For Adam's family, they hope that someone will come forward and give them the answers they are so desperately seeking. If you have any information about the disappearance of Adam Castillo, please contact the Cochise County Sheriff's Office at 520-803-3280.
My mom sat there for months, crying, not knowing, just hearing her, I don't know if my baby's cold or if he needs a sweater, because it was already getting fall. And then just knowing what had happened to him, knowing that we, to this day, I still go out to the desert. And I look, knowing just what would have had happened to him and knowing if there would be a body to put him to rest would be the greatest thing.
What happened with my brother, it's very hard for us because there's only rumors. We don't know. It just sucks. Like, there's never any, like, evidence.
Like, I say, you know, Lord, I'm still waiting. But at times, you know, like I tell them, the hardest part is the patience, the waiting. And sometimes I do get angry, just very hard. But I have learned to forgive them, like I said, Lord. You say to forgive. It's hard, but it's more hard to be bundling up all these things in your heart and your life that is just eating away at you and depriving you of life. I wonder if he's cold. I wonder if he's hungry. You know, I wonder if he's thirsty, you know. I hope somebody has given him shelter. You know, and then later on, as the time passed on, I would say, Lord, just show me where he's at so we can go and get him. That's all I ask of you, Lord. But if it's too much, then forgive me, Lord, but he was a somebody, and that somebody was my son.
That brings us to the end of episode 271. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Arkansas. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When 2 of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one but 2 trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.